Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to this special bonus episode of Alpha Chat, the business and economics podcast of the Financial Times. I'm Cardiff Garcia. You might remember an earlier Alpha Chat episode from last year in which we interviewed Miriam Leiva, an independent journalist and dissident in Cuba and a really impressive woman. We spoke about the legacy of her late husband, a Cuban economist named Oscar Espinosa Chepe, who was once imprisoned for having written the truth about the Cuban economy and then treated horribly while he was in prison. And this was after the couple had spent much of their lives persecuted by Fidel Castro and his security apparatus. I really love talking to Miriam, and I admire her courage and resilience and also her ability to keep her eyes open and tell the truth in those matters where things have improved, even if not nearly enough. She continues to speak and write about the social and economic repression in Cuba, and she also continues advocating for the U.S. to end its embargo on trade and travel with the island. So after Fidel Castro died, I emailed her and told her that I wanted to talk to her on the phone about it, and also about her hopes and fears about the future of the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba with a Trump presidency soon to begin. So here it is. So, Miriam, first of all, where were you when you found out that Fidel Castro had passed away?
Well, I was here at home because I was watching television, and all of a sudden, all the the channels started to announce that Raúl Castro had an important statement, and Raúl Castro spoke about 2 minutes, and Cuban people that the commander in chief has passed away. And that he was going to be cremated, and tomorrow we'll give you more information. That's what he said.
How did you feel when you heard?
Well, in fact, something that was I didn't expect to hear at that moment, but I was aware that he might die anytime because he was in a very poor health. You could see the pictures they had shown very recently, and besides, when they published something that said that was his article, he was not concentrated. He wasn't focused on what was going on in Cuba or the world. So I knew that in any time they would had to announce this news.
Do you think change anything about what you expect to happen with the Cuban economy and Cuban society?
Well, Fidel Castro, I don't think he was interfering in everyday life or decisions in Cuba. But anyway, all the people that didn't want changes, that didn't want to lose their positions and wanted to keep on controlling everything, they it seems that they used his name and his thoughts to stop any possibility of changes. And then I think that now, since they cannot take hold of this anymore, and that Raúl Castro now, well, the government has told the people that everyone should signed a statement or a commitment to some words of Fidel Castro. And it's interesting because those words start saying that revolution is changes when they are needed. So I think that maybe they could use this. They would use these words to speed up changes. Anyway, that's not something certain. That's the hope, I think, of a great majority of the people here in Cuba. Everybody wants some changes, and I think that, of course, he would only try to change the what is not as much as everybody would expect, but anyway, to keep power, to move this economy that is creeping and it's collapsing even more. He needs to bring about change in our castle. So, and with those changes, of course, I expect more opening in the sense of Cubans being able to participate in decision-taking and also to have more freedoms of speech, of association, of participating in government even. But no, that's government, I think, would be in a long run. But anyway, of course, I would like also to go this to the society. But at least if they start economic changes, people will be more independent, will be more free to be able to express and to participate.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that about how there is still a class of Cuban politicians that wants to keep things the old way. I guess you could call it the Fidelista way, because after President Obama visited the island this year, and I remember that you yourself met with him briefly with the president, Fidel Castro wrote a letter in the state daily newspaper about a week later or a few days later with a scathing denunciation of Obama. He said that Cuba doesn't need anything from, his words, the empire. It didn't seem like a constructive contribution to the ongoing restoration of normal diplomatic relations between the two countries.
Yes, that was the thought of one part of these people in the party and the government, because it was all his life what he had been doing. But you could see that Raúl Castro was going in another way. He kept on meeting with the Americans. He kept on the impact of Obama's measures that favored the people, and also his personality. You know, when he was here, what he said live on TV, there was a great enthusiasm and expectation. Then people felt and still feel that if that didn't go further and help even more, was because the government, Raúl Castro, would move. So immediately, even before Obama left the country, they were talking against, you know, they had a very big propaganda against, saying that the embargo, the Americans, and so on. But people in the streets didn't believe that. And that the feeling, what people want is changes. Of course, here in Cuba, they cannot speak out. But it's, you know, it's in all the society. You can feel it. That is what people want. And the government knows that. And even to be able to have people working with more incentive, and they have to open and also to bring those foreign investment they need, they want, the government wants. The government has to open more.
Yeah. And do you think that even though by the end he was more a symbol of the old way of doing things because he wasn't involved in the day-to-day management of the government and of governmental affairs, he was still a kind of potent symbol for the old way of doing things, and therefore his death now essentially clears the path a little bit more to a kind of ongoing liberalization of the Cuban economy and of Cuban society? Do you think it makes it maybe a bit easier?
Well, it could be easier if Raúl Castro, who has all the power with his military, it starts an opening and works faster, because it has been, everything has almost been stopped here last year and this year, and the economy is falling, and they don't have money, the government doesn't have money, foreign investment haven't come, the American embargo each day is more further, you can expect it to end in short run. So they have to do something, because even their lifetime, they can see that now that Fidel Castro is dying, they can see that they can die any moment too, and they want to leave a new leadership. And if they don't do that fast, before Raúl Castro steps down from the government next year, because he's going to keep power, he's going to be the first secretary of the party, and the party is the main ruler in Cuba. So he's going to keep on being the main ruler, but he's going to bring new, all and others, not new, but others to for everyday, you know, work in the government. So it's very important that he stops this slow pace and accelerate for what he wants to leave, and also the others who are going to take those places, they must be eager also to be able to change things in their favor. Of course, no one here, not even those in the, you know, ruling spheres, say really what they feel and what they think is best, because they fear to lose the position and not gain new posts.
Sure. Let me ask you a little bit about your own personal thoughts when you found out that Fidel Castro had died. You said last year when we first spoke that Fidel Castro never forgives and he never forgets. You and your late husband, Oscar, obviously spent a part of your lives trying to get the truth out to people in Cuba, and you were punished for it. And I remember you telling me the incredible story of how Oscar suffered when he was arrested in the middle part of the 2000s and was treated quite brutally in prison. And I think you said that it might have even accelerated the deterioration of his health. I mean, when you found out that he died, what were you thinking, given, I guess, the incredible and destructive presence of Fidel Castro in your own personal life?
Well, I could say I was relieved, because I never feel, you know, hatred or revenge. It's my way of the way I am, and what I wanted was this to end. So I mean, the way that he managed everything, and he had all of us grabbed, and to have the possibility to go further, to do an opening in Cuba. So I really didn't. I cannot tell you that I was happy. I'm never happy for anybody who dies. Only that I felt relief, and well, I said, well, it had to be, and finally it came.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I noticed when I was in Cuba myself last year was that a lot of people still had the hallmarks of fear and paranoia that come from living for so long inside a country with a very powerful state security apparatus, where there's a risk of being spied on, there's a risk of being followed. Do you think that some of that will ease now that Fidel Castro has died? Or do you think that that's going to take something more dramatic before people start to feel that some sense of relief or some sense of, personal freedom that they haven't felt to this point?
I don't think that they're going to release the security police or the way they have the repression. Raúl Castro changed the ways, and now it's not long-term detentions, and they are short-term detention, but we keep on being watched, you know, all the time. And if we do something that they don't like, even if it's just talking, they would come and they might take you to a police station, and you don't know what else they could do. But and now that Fidel is not, well, has passed away, maybe immediately in the short run, they will keep a tight vigilance because they know that maybe if people will be, you know, will want to do something for changes. But anyway, now is the possibility that little by little this opens. I don't know how long this would take, and give more possibilities for people to participate in Cuba's life. That any this security apparatus they have, or really, you know, the way they watch everybody and they prohibit everything, they will keep it, and they will try not to open it. But this, if the society moves, if other people start, you know, listening to the social feeling, they will have to open. Yeah. And this is the same regime. These are the same rulers. And the ones who are coming, they pretend to follow their views. So they won't change from one day to another.
Yeah. As one of the dissidents who met with President Obama when he visited the island earlier in 2016, Do you know if you yourself were watched either before or after that happened?
Yes, of course. I've always been watched for almost 25 years. And yes, I've been watched, and I know that sometimes I go places and I see that they follow me, and or they sometimes when I come out of my door, I see that their car or somebody's standing there, and it's one of their officials watching what I'm going to do or where I'm going. And very recently in September, I went to a procession of the Virgin of the Caridad del Cobre. That's the main Virgin in Cuba. I go every year. And then all of a sudden, I heard, Miriam, and this was the security officer that took me in detention when the Pope was here. So he said, no, I just wanted to say, to see how do you feel? I said, oh, fine, bye. And I just walked away. And then all the time that I was moving there in the procession, he was, very, very close to me. So he was all the time watching what I would do or to make me feel, you know, their pressure. It's to make me feel that I'm watched and that I have to be aware that anything can happen to me. But anyway, I just did what I always do. That is, go with the procession and take pictures.
From speaking with your friends and family after Castro died, do you get the sense that they are also feeling the same sense of relief, or are the feelings a little bit more mixed, given that he was a presence in their lives for so long?
Yeah, relief, and of course there are some others that think that, you know, it was about time, you know, something like that. Or and of course there are others who still support the revolution and think that Fidel Castro wasn't so bad. You know, it depends. But most of the people want that this, be a new possibilities for all Cubans.
Yeah. Let me ask you now about what's happening between the U.S. and Cuba. Obviously, the rapprochement of the last few years started under Obama at the end of 2014. Since then, actually, quite a lot has happened. It's much, much easier for Americans to visit Cuba now than it was before. There has been some limited easing on the ability of American companies to operate in Cuba, not a lot. And Cuba has also started trying very, very slowly to attract a little bit more foreign investment, even though the changes to this point haven't yielded a whole lot of success. Do you fear now that President-elect Donald Trump will be taking office in January, that some of that is going to be reversed? Do you think it can be reversed? And overall, what's your outlook for the near-term future of the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba?
Well, I would like them to remain and even to go further, but I would wait. What is who waits more? A Cuban American community, not Cuban American community, Cuban American legislators, congressmen, yeah, senators, or the need and the aspiration of the Cubans here in Cuba and in the United States, and especially American enterprises, trade, men, farmers, and intellectuals, and all other Americans that want to be here in Cuba, present, who want exchange with Cuba, and I think that they wait a lot, you know, and Trump must think about this. I hope he doesn't revert this. I know that before elections, he promised to be hard, to go harder on the Cuban government, that he would push more for respect for human rights and would help more the opposition here in Cuba. I would like progress, of course, more progress in human rights and the opposition could work freely here in Cuba. But of course, I think that this could be done in a way that doesn't harm what has been achieved up to now by Obama's policy. And I am convinced that what happens in Cuba and what should be done depends on us Cubans. I am thankful for leaders or for governments who are concerned with our problems and who press the government, the Cuban government, but everything is on us. And besides that, I won't put at stake what has been achieved during the Obama administration with a very hard policy that makes this government react aggressively. This government needs isolation. We don't need isolation. Cuban can go back to isolation because this is going to harm all Cubans. So I think this has to be in a very intelligent, in a very such manner, not just say, well, if you don't do this, I do that, and I change this. And no, because the Cuban people and Cuba is, you know, it can be harmed by that. And of course, I'm thankful to the Americans and to Obama and to the American government, but everything depends on what we do. We cannot, you know, just expect others to do what we have to do.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned that, the idea that it depends on the Cubans and their wishes. I've been tracking public opinion in both countries for the last couple of years on how they feel about the rapprochement. In Cuba, and I had expected this, the overwhelming share of people definitely want normalized relations with the United States. That was not a surprise at all. A little bit more surprising was how quickly the Cuban-American community came around on the idea of also reestablishing a normal diplomatic relationship. It's now to the point where the majority of Cuban-Americans also think that the U.S. should have a normal relationship with Cuba, and it actually is just a small but very vocal and very aggressive contingent of Cuban-American politicians and other Republican politicians who stand against it. I wonder how long they can hold out, though. It seems like public opinion in both countries has swung decisively in one direction, and even if there is a temporary halt or a temporary setback to the progress, it seems like at least in the medium term, the winds are only blowing in one direction.
Well, I'd be very glad if the wind blows in the direction of our, you know, Cuba and the United States being closer and walk to normalization and that we can, you know, get rid of this pressure from the Cuban government and all the time blaming the United States for all their wrongdoing or what they do with the Cuban people. And this is can be helped by the position, by the way the American government acts and reacts. You know, it's in both ways. So I hope that this need or this feeling for closer ties and between our people and everybody, you know, different sectors in the United States and Cuba, this would progress. This would progress. I think that would be the best for us in Cuba.
Yeah. Final question. It's a bit of a personal question. Do you want to just give our listeners a sense of what you're working on these days? Are you writing? Are you speaking? Are you also agitating for change yourself?
No, I don't agitate for change. I write, and people read a lot. Well, it's difficult here in Cuba for people to read what I write, but I know that a lot of people read me. And these days, I have been talking over the phone a lot with foreign media, a radio station, and here these days, since there are so many reporters here, so many correspondents, they have been coming to my home, radio, TV, or written, you know, and that's what I've been doing. Just a while ago, the three reporters came from different countries, and they were here with me talking and you know, and I think this is a way that I can let know the world that the world is like, you know, a lot of people see it from far only, oh, they have a good education and they have good sanitary assistance, so everything is very good in Cuba. No. It's not that way. And then they see this Fidel Castro that is the hero and the glory. No. That's not Cuba and that's not Fidel Castro, in fact. But it's very important. So it's very important that I give my view, at least one more view. I try to say what I think is what's going on, to be objective. And I do this to help people to know out of Cuba what is going on, and also try to let know people in Cuba also my point of view, because many of these special TV stations, they come back to Cuba. You know, it's incredible how people tell me in the streets, hey, I watched you yesterday in the channels, they call it here, or in the cable. And that's because they take from the what is especially from Miami, the stations from Miami, and then they have what they call here a package, and then they rent this, and it goes all over Cuba, you know. So it's important. Some of them are just soap operas and things like that, but some others have good news and a lot of things. And I know that when I say something and it's on TV outside Cuba, I know that many people here in Cuba watch it.
Yeah, to explain to our listeners what you mean by that, obviously the television and the media inside of Cuba is very tightly controlled, but often when foreign TV comes to interview you, it'll show up in Miami and then it'll be taped and it'll be effectively smuggled into Cuba through a very popular thing called the paquete, which is then watched by people on their computers, a few days later. But it's a way of getting your message out in a kind of roundabout way as well, because you do the interview, it then is goes into a foreign feed, and then it comes back into Cuba through this back channel.
And you know, also they have what they call the cables. That is, that they have antenna, and then they put cables from one house to another, and they watch they watch Miami channels directly at the same, live at the same time. It's incredible. If something is tonight, somebody is in all over Cuba, because mainly it's in Havana, but it's all over Cuba. They will watch this. They will listen to this.
Right. They'll find a way to get that feed, mm-hmm. And to share it. That's great. Well, Medium, thanks so much for speaking with us again. I hope to see you again soon in person. And yeah, we really appreciate it. Always love talking to you.
Okay, thank you for calling, and, well, I'd be glad to see you again in Havana.
And that is the end of our chat with Miriam Leyva. Again, we'll have our normally scheduled Alpha Chat episode also released tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.